How you doing? Welcome.
Welcome to That Movie Podcast, Film Talk Q&A. I'm Alex.
I'm Quincy.
And we are here.
For you.
For you, absolutely.
All right, let's kick it off in theaters now.
Damn straight.
What are you seeing lately?
What have I seen lately? Good question. Man, I saw Gangster Squad.
Gangster Squad.
If you haven't seen this yet, run, do not walk to your local theater. My God, this movie is just... Okay, picture what would happen if Max Allen Collins were writing for True Detective. You've got this movie. I mean, it's historical...
And if neither of those things mean anything to you, then don't go see this movie.
Go see it even more, all right?
I have no idea who that is.
All right, Max Allen Collins, you probably know him best as the guy who wrote Road to Perdition.
Oh, okay.
But he's also, when he's not doing movie adaptations, he basically dabbles in pretty much historical fiction. He's got a lot of good stuff, but yeah, I mean, it's just this movie, while it, you know, it even tells you right up front, you know, based on true events or, you know, based on reality or whatever, however they're phrasing it. Yes, there actually was a squad like this back in the 40s, but, yeah, this movie is not going to be historically accurate.
So it's just have a good time.
Pretty
don't
much.
Don't think about it too much.
Think of what you wanted Mulholland Falls to be. That's what this movie is.
What was Mulholland Falls?
The one with McNulty, and where basically it's like him and, you know, like the other four guys are, like, taking on the mob. It was loosely based, again, on the same material of the Hat Squad. It's a hell of a lot of fun. It's
great. The cast looks good. You got Ryan Gosling, Josh Brolin,
Josh Brolin's awesome in this movie. Of course, you know, you got Emma Stone, who's...
Doesn't he kind of always play the same thing in every movie, though?
Not always, no.
Yeah. I don't know. He seems to kind of play the same character in every movie.
Although, I do have to admit, Ryan Gosling in this movie does remind me of, like, a very... Think of him as, like, a young Jack Van Sands. And you're just going, wow.
Who's that?
Kevin Spacey's character in L.A. Confidential.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So do you have to, like, film noir to really like Gangster Squad? Because that seems
it
to be
can't hurt.
The references you're making.
I'm a huge film noir fan, but yeah, I mean, if, you know, you like just a good story, if you've, you know, missed the good old days of, you know, the two-fisted action film, then, you know, welcome back. Just go and have a good time.
All right.
So what'd you see?
I saw Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Good times. All right, so what movie is this the sequel to?
The first one.
The first one being the Tobe Hooper...
Yes, 1978. Okay. It even begins with... Like, you see 3D scenes from the first one, and then it literally starts, it continues the ending of the first one.
So it's,
you know, where
like Texas Chainsaw Massacre
there.
2 never happened.
Then. Exactly. It's like none of them have ever happened. So
if only that were true.
And this is the weirdest one. The weirdest one.
Weirder than Next Generation?
Dude, yes. This one. Because none of them before have tried to... I mean, Leatherface, they turn him into an anti-hero.
Yeah.
And they turn him into, like... I mean, at one point, the lady who he's been chasing the whole movie, he, like, saves her. She escapes, but the mayor and the policemen are beating the crap out of Leatherface and going to beat him to death.
Yeah.
So she feels so bad, she goes back to save him. Throws him the chainsaw and is like, do what you do, cuz!
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he becomes like this, like... Like you're supposed to be like, all right, Leatherface is cool. I want him on my side. It's so weird. But yeah, I mean, it takes place at literally, you know, at the end of the first one where the brother gets hit by the semi and then Leatherface is doing his dance as she drives away. Yeah, and then Leatherface goes back into the house and then it's like maybe the next day and a cop comes up and is wanting to see Leatherface because... This girl's said that they murdered her friends and everything.
Yeah, she's gone hysterical. And...
But the weird thing, except now there's like this whole family living in the house and they're holed up and it's kind of this standoff and this whole posse from the town come. Yeah. And it's like this whole firefight and basically the town sets the house on fire and puts them all to death. So it becomes almost like this Freddy Krueger thing.
Yeah, I was gonna
except
say,
that
kind of seeing like some Rob Zombie elements going there.
No, Leatherface was locked away like down in the basement, and then the baby got away, and basically the baby turns into the main chick. Yeah, there's this baby, one of the babies in the family.
Oh, okay.
Leatherface's cousin, essentially.
Yeah, that must have been left out of the Tobey Hooper version. So.
Yeah, exactly. In the Tobey Hooper version, it's basically there's four members of the family.
Uh-huh.
You know? And that's including Gramps.
The three brothers and Grandpa, that's it. Yeah.
And you assume that he's dead. Yeah. Until, but anyway.
until he starts
yeah, so
on
that's
the
kind of the concept. So, you know, it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it pretty much stunk. And you really don't get the vibe that Leatherface is just this huge, hulking monster with, like, these childlike tendencies that kind of make him creepier.
Yeah.
It's more that he's just kind of misunderstood. You know, if you're a fan of the series, rent it when it comes out.
Yeah.
It's worth it just the oddity that it is, especially when it's a movie about a town against Leatherface and you're rooting for Leatherface. Anyway. Last one, the one we both saw.
Yep.
One that has a lot of hype.
Yeah.
Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty.
Catherine Bigelow's new movie.
Mm-hmm.
About the hunt for Osama bin Laden.
Yep. Yeah.
What'd you think? Deserving of the hype. Best picture of the year.
See, yeah, I have a hard time calling it the best picture
of
the year.
Super intense thriller.
I did enjoy it. Super intense thriller, not so much. I would recommend it. I would say go see it. If you're looking for any kind of answers, you're not going to find them. But
if it was a pilot for a TV show, I would not be compelled to watch that TV show.
It's understandable.
I thought a lot of it was just kind of a, okay, I get it, let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
Can't we pick up the pace here a little bit? Can't we just kind of edit this thing down? Can't this be an hour 45? Because I really think it could have been. It seemed like it was like 2 hours and 15 minutes. And the first hour and 45 minutes, I was pretty much bored.
Hmm.
It was like, oh, they're waterboarding. Okay, I get it. I mean, I felt like the character. I felt like her every day when she'd go and write the number on the...
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's been 89 days since we've known this information and nothing's happened. Mm-hmm. I, as a viewer, felt that way.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, okay, it's been 89 minutes since we've had this information and nothing has happened. Okay, now it's been an hour and 20 minutes and nothing has happened. I mean, the final assault on the compound, that was intense.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was very effective. It was cool that they chose to not have any music. You know, it created a sense of realism.
Oh, yeah. I did find it, as far as this kind of new, you know, breed of war film that seems to have come out over the past, you know, 3 or 4 years, this one I would say was probably the most interesting one I've seen.
But, so Zero Dark Thirty. But would you recommend it?
I would.
Yeah, I think I would probably recommend waiting for DVD, maybe even TV. I don't think it was all that whoopee. I definitely don't understand all the accolades that it's getting. I watch a TV commercial and people are just going nuts over it.
Know. It's like they make it out to be the greatest thing since, you know, the invention of cinema. And I'm just kind of going, okay, it's not that good. But like I said, for the most part, I enjoyed it. It held my interest. It kept me entertained. I didn't walk out going, God, that was a waste of time and money.
I kind of did.
Well.
So,
there you go. Ramp.
All right, with this podcast, since today being the 16th of January, assuming that you're listening to this in real time.
Regardless, on the 16th
of on the 16th of January,
it is John Carpenter's birthday.
So happy birthday, John Carpenter.
And John Carpenter, for those that don't know, is a very seminal director to any child of the 80s.
Hell yeah.
Especially male.
He was pretty much the driving force in our lives, so we have basically just going to turn this into
That's the rest
all
of this
John
podcast.
Carpenter all the time. So
rest of the podcast. We're just going to kick this thing off and talk about the ones we love and then Can I talk about what happened to this man? Then talk about, I got some of, like, my least favorite that you gotta spread some hate when it comes to this guy because he's made a lot of shit.
Yeah, he's hit both ends of the spectrum.
So, yeah.
Attention, you are now entering the debarkation area. No talking, no smoking. Follow the orange line to the processing area. The next scheduled departure to the prison is in 2 hours. You now have the option to terminate and be cremated on the premises. If you elect this option, notify the duty sergeant in your processing area.
The first John Carpenter movie I ever saw, I believe, was Elvis.
Okay.
It was his made-for-TV movie.
Yep, back in 79.
79,
okay.
Yeah, I saw that because I remember the next movie I saw by him was Halloween.
Uh-huh.
And it was... Basically, my mom wanted to watch the Elvis movie because she liked Halloween, and she was a fan of Elvis.
Okay.
But she thought it was odd that the guy that did Halloween was doing a movie about Elvis. Really enjoyed the TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't leave much of an impression, though. It's one of those I don't really want to revisit much, because I think that I'm just going to leave it a nice little memory of my childhood.
There you go.
You know what I mean? There's some of those that just, you get that gut feeling that they should be.
Yeah. Honestly, I'd never seen it before we agreed to do this, and so, yeah, I pretty much went out, tracked down everything. I enjoyed Elvis, but I can definitely see why it's like, yeah, it's like you watch it once on TV, it becomes like this big TV event. In fact, thinking back on it now, some of these scenes I kind of remember seeing commercials for, so I'm going, wow,
like okay. Like the TV?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, yeah, kind of iconic, but yeah, yeah. I'm just kind of going, it's like, okay, but there were just some... performance scenes and whatnot. I'm going, I do remember when this came out. Yeah, this was like a big event.
Yeah, it
and
was.
Yeah, wow, I was just going, damn, that was John Carpenter? Okay.
Yeah. But what was the first one you saw by him?
The first one I saw, I would have to say, would be The Fog.
That was a great one.
You know, I went to go see that theatrically. I talked my dad into it, into taking me.
Oh, yeah.
And...
Gotta love dads.
Oh, man. I just... That movie scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, about the ghost pirates.
Yeah.
Basically, what people remember of it is the glowing eyes
in mm-hmm.
the fog. And, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, with Blake, you know, coming back to...
Yeah, it was great. It's a great ghost story.
Oh, yeah.
I watch it almost yearly around mm-hmm. Halloween.
Damn straight. And... But, yeah, it just...
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Atkins.
Yep. Who else was in that? That was Adrian Barbeau, of course. You know,
yep, the yep.
title role. But yeah, I just remember seeing that movie, and all the previews that I saw made me think that it was going to be like this big, you know, kind of really intense action film. And then I saw this thing, and I'd never seen a horror film outside of like Universal. So I'm just going, oh man, but, yeah, it's just like I said, just scared the hell out of me. But also, once I came down, you know. Off the ceiling and out from under the covers, or however you want to put it. This movie really made me realize that it's like, wait a minute, you know, it's like, I saw a movie and I was afraid of the dark. I saw a movie and it had like this really intense...
visceral impact.
Impact on my, you know, I was going, wow. And I think that's, because I'd always been into films, you know, my parents had been taking me, you know, for a number of years because it was just something to do. But at that point, I started to realize, like, wait a minute. You know, it's like, you can really kind of mess with people, you know.
So how old were you in 80?
Oh, well, I was, 80, I was in sixth grade, so.
12?
Yeah, 11, 12, something like that, somewhere in that area. You know, it's like, that's when I realized, like, wow, there's more to this than just sheer entertainment. It's like, you can really just kind of. Make the audience do what you want to do, and
yeah,
special effects, you know, became like a big part of my kind of reading diet, and yeah, you know, I'm just going, wow, okay.
Yeah, the first one for me was probably Halloween, and it was,
yeah,
you know, him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's, and that's the thing, he was the first one to really make me aware of how music,
yeah,
can so influence what you're watching and the vibe that you have while watching a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And how, and really, I personally believe that that's what changed about his movies, and that's why his movies turned to shit.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, his plots really haven't changed much. He hasn't really left the genre, and he's not trying to do, you know, different kinds of movies. He's still kind of doing his weird little things.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is he changed how he did his soundtracks. He got away from the synthesizer.
Yeah.
He got away from these simple capturing the intensity and the simple human emotion with these simple soundtracks. And I think he lost what made his stuff cool, which was the soundtrack. I mean, because his movies were cool. Absolutely. Like his earlier movies, I mean, just, you got Halloween, The Fog, Escape from New York, The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China, They Live, In the Mouth of Madness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean...
Well, except for In the Mouth of Madness.
Sure, you weren't a fan of that, but still, I mean, all those were just cool movies.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he had, like, this stunt. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a man deserving of this tribute.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, it's funny, though, because I listened to the commentary that he did for The Ward, and he was talking about how he's kind of gotten away from doing music just because he's like, you know, I'm getting old. It's like, by the time you do pre-production, and then you go out and you shoot the film, then you get post-production, and then you got to turn around and do the soundtrack, he's like, I just don't care anymore. You know? He's like, God, that was just too much work, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's what, like 75?
Something
80?
Like that, yeah.
He's old.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
I understand that. You know, some might say, well, just stop that. Because he's not that good. His evidence of the award.
Well, yeah.
And just about anything he did in the 90s.
Yeah, so from pretty much the 90s on up. Although the Ward,
They Live,
really
was the last
wasn't
good thing he did.
That, yeah. The Ward wasn't all that bad, but.
Oh, I thought it pretty much.
Well,
was
it,
really
it
that
admittedly,
bad.
It took me the commentary to make me kind of at least appreciate what he was trying to do.
Well, let me ask you, was he trying to just, like, rip off every other scary movie that was popular in the last 10, 15 years? Because that's what he did. With the Ward, every single plot point was like, oh, so now he's going to turn into The Grudge. Oh, now he's going after the whole...
Yeah.
I hated that movie. I was like, because some people were kind of like, oh, it's John Carpenter's return to form. And,
no.
And I bought in a little bit, and especially after Cigarette Burns, because, okay.
Cigarette Burns is probably the last good thing that he did.
It's the only good thing he's done since They Live.
Yeah.
That's the clarifier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you say it's the last good thing, and that happened, you know, like 2006, I believe. So.
Yeah, 2006.
So, yeah, that makes him seem like he's still fairly relevant, and he's really not. he hasn't done anything good since 1988. So, what's your top three favorite John Carpenter?
Top three favorite John Carpenters? Well, of course, The Fog. Then, yeah, probably Halloween. And, yeah, I gotta go with Escape from New York.
I would say, in my opinion, I think The Thing is his creme de la creme. I think it's his...
I enjoy that, but that's probably like number
achievement.
Four. You know, it's,
I think it's his number one. I think it is the best movie he's made.
Okay.
I think it's actually his only movie that I can play people now, no matter what age, now, and know, like, exactly as it was back then, and people are still impressed, and people still love it, and end up falling in love with that movie, whereas a lot of his stuff has not aged well. And while, for sentimental reasons, I still enjoy watching it, and I thoroughly enjoy it, I do have to concede that, like, someone watching Escape from New York for the first time doesn't really enjoy it on the same level that I did, because back when I was seeing it for the first time, seeing a room full of boxes with blinking lights and calling it computers didn't bother me. Or seeing a monitor that's just green with like an airplane kind of tilting as this like tracker aerial view, it didn't bother me, you know, because I wasn't jaded. I didn't have the experience of computers before, you know, I mean, whereas now, like, kids watch it now and it's like, oh, really? Did, like, a caveman watch this or make this? Because that's not even how things look anymore. Is that really how things used to look back then? It's like, no.
See, that was it.
They're even guessing back then.
Exactly. It's like it didn't look like anything at the time. So,
or seeing the you know, just the intro of Escape from New York, which I love Escape from New York. It's definitely my top three of his, because my top three from him is The Thing, Escape from New York, and Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, I love The Fog.
Mm-hmm.
I love They Live.
Yeah.
I love
Big Trouble in Little
Big
China.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why I narrow it down to three. I'm just going, oh, wait.
I know, but you know what? That's what you gotta do. Sometimes you gotta work. But
it's so funny, though, to go back and hear Jamie Lee Curtis doing the voice for the computers of Escape from New York.
That's Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah. When they get to the prison, it's like, you know, the debarkation area, you know, is in the orange zone and all that. That's Jamie Lee Curtis.
Is it her voice that says that whole, you have the right to terminate mm-hmm. yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Woo. Anyway.
I think one of the main reasons that Carpenter started to hit a decline, aside from not doing his own music, was he stopped writing his own scripts.
Yeah, I mean, I think Prince of Darkness was kind of the beginning of the end for him.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a fan of that movie?
I could appreciate what they were trying to do with it.
We're gonna. It's gonna sound like we're recording in the jungle. I just realized we got these fucking birds, man.
You know where you are.
Wait a minute. I know who you are. Yeah, but I heard you were dead.
I am.
Okay, now that we're in a less jungly area. So what's another great one that you love by him?
Another great one. Oh boy. Well, of course.
Well, I mean, the dude made Kurt Russell cool.
Hell yeah.
I mean, he took a guy that I grew up watching as like the nerd in Disney movies.
Exactly. He took
and
the
made
Disney
him like
kid.
One of the coolest, iconic. I mean, Snake Plissken is just mm-hmm. a cool ass motherfucker.
Damn Skippy. I mean, yeah. It's like between, you know, Escape from New York and Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Burton. Great, great character. And that kind of showed Kurt Russell could be funny.
Yeah.
And still be cool. Yeah. But he had a real sense of humor, because I remember seeing Big Trouble in Little China, and that's what really stuck out to me,
mm-hmm.
was how funny it was.
Oh, hell yeah. Because you got all this action going on, but essentially it's a Kurt Russell film, but it's not. You know, it's all about Wang Chi and all the shit that he's got to go through, and Jack's just kind of like the audience avatar, just kind of tagging along for the ride, just like...
So what's your favorite John Carpenter, Kurt Russell
John Carpenter,
collab?
Kurt Russell... collaboration. Wow. See, here again. Yeah, I got to either go with Escape from New York or either Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Because I've enjoyed pretty much everything they've done together.
How can you pick between...
Exactly.
Really, between the three.
The only one that's the easy knockoff is Escape from L.A. It's like that
I
one.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Escape from New York.
Yeah.
The Thing and mm-hmm. Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really only because of my love of, like, Escape from New York and The Fog and
mm-hmm.
and Halloween that I even gave Assault on Precinct 13 a chance, because I remember the cover at the video store. It said from the director of Halloween.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'll give it a shot. Look okay. at all these other ones, because even from an early age, I kind of paid attention to the directors. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, I gave it a shot and... thoroughly enjoyed it too. I was yeah. like, man, this guy, he don't make a bad movie. He makes them intense and fun and just nonstop. They don't mess around. They don't wear out their welcome.
No, they get in, they take care of business, they get
it's
out.
It's like Escape from New York, and errant cheesiness aside,
mm-hmm.
it's just a nonstop fun ride.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just goes, and it's over before you know it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing that the first time I saw that was back when HBO used to do the free weekend. Remember those?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was staying with my grandmother at the time, and we stayed up probably till midnight, which, you know, for grandma, that was a little bit late. But
you mean?
I
you're making Gam-Gam tired.
I wasn't the one doing it. I mean, it's, I was just like, oh, look, Escape from New York's coming on. It's like, you know, I've seen pieces of this film. I'd always wanted to see, you know, in its entirety. She's like, oh, okay, well, I'll watch the first, you know, few minutes with you, you know, and I'll probably just go to bed. I'm like, all right. Next thing you know, the credits are rolling. Grandma's still awake. She's like, well, that was a really good movie. I'm like, I know.
You going to kill me now, Snake?
I'm too tired. Maybe later.
Okay, I got to tell my story, my all Escape right. from New York story, since you brought it up.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to see that movie so bad. Mm-hmm. And it was R, so I wasn't yeah. able to. And
yeah,
finally,
theatrically, I'm trying to talk my parents into going to see this thing. And it's like, neither one of them really were giving two shits about it. But yeah, finally, it came on cable. I'm like, all right.
Fast forward to the summer after it came out and the world premiere on HBO. It was going to be at 7 o'clock that night. So I had been working on my mom and my dad for like, well, it was really my mom. You
yeah.
know, you convince your mom, because my dad was kind of like, whatever, you're boys, whatever. And so worked on my mom and somehow got her to agree. Most of the time, I was just tenacious. So most of the time, she would finally just agree because I would wear her down. And
that's how it's done.
Yeah. And I remember we had to move. My dad was a sadistic man who... would make us twice a year move wood from one side of the steps to the other side of the steps.
Yeah.
A cord of wood. It's not fun. I'm not a big fan of, like, menial labor anyway, especially when there's, like, bugs and spiders and splinters hiding out in all facets, yeah. Especially when it's just moving at 10 feet. I didn't understand it. I don't understand it as an adult. I mean, I get the concept. Keep it fresh. Whatever. Rotate your wood. Whatever. If you got to rotate your wood, you got too much wood. But anyway, I digress. So I got done with moving this wood.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those, like, brothers, hurry up! Because they weren't as concerned about seeing this movie, so they weren't on the time schedule of having this done by 7.
Yeah.
Like I was.
You're out there moving three pieces.
Yeah, I'm like,
one.
Yeah, I'm like trying to motivate them. They're over there drinking iced tea. So
we'll get it done eventually. We got all night.
Yeah, finally get it to where it's like 7:05 and we're done.
Yeah.
And I run upstairs, busting my mom and dad's room. That was the only place that HBO was in my parents' room.
Yep.
So, yeah, settled down on the floor in front of the TV and turned on HBO and started watching it. Now my brothers came in and watching it with me. We were about a half hour into the movie, and my dad comes in, kind of busts into the room, says, "Who turned the water on down in the bathroom?" Oh, no. Basically, my brother had turned the water on, left it on, and flooded the bathroom.
Oh.
So he didn't get to finish this gift anymore. But I did, and then the next day I watched it again, and the great thing about HBO is they really played to a child's sensibilities. When a kid likes a movie, he likes to watch it like 40 times, and that's about how many times HBO would play it. For like every 2 weeks.
Yep.
I even like took a tape recorder, like a cassette recorder,
yep.
Held it on a table up by the speaker of the TV, recorded that movie onto cassette tape. They had 90-minute cassette tape.
Oh, yeah.
Took it to school and would listen to it on recess. Specifically, the two scenes where it has the F word. And I'd get all the boys gathered around me. And, yeah, that was probably my first taste of being a bad influence. But anyway, we got to stay away from these childhood stories. It's making me sound like a bad person, which I probably was. I was a bad child. So, yeah, that's my escape from New York.
All right.
I'd never be the same. Ever since I've seen that movie, I've seen it at least one time a year since then.
Oh, at least. Yeah.
Love it.
Absolutely. You know, it's like I always used to tell my ex-wife, "Honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes." You just gotta love Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yeah.
That movie's just amazing.
Oh, yeah. That's great. You got Jack Burton, you got Lopan, you got the Storms.
The Storms, yeah.
I remember being impressed with how funny it was, and it was just hugely entertaining. It wasn't a perfect movie by any means. I mean, the whole weird orange monkey man in the suit thing didn't make any sense, didn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
It had a lot of, like, weird fantastical elements that they didn't do anything with, which, you know, back in the 80s, it didn't bother me at all. Now, watching it, it's kind of like, all right, I can see how it's kind of
What made it cool, especially back when I first saw it, because I remember going to the Glenwood Theater and seeing it, and I think my mom just dropped me off or something, and I was walking home. I just remember thinking on the way home, it's like just putting all the pieces together because, you know, late at night, you know, it was kind of like, it was like the old Friday Fright Night, but I believe it was on Saturday night, you'd have Black Belt Theater. I think that eventually got moved to like Saturday or Sunday afternoon, but anyway, Black Belt Theater is another episode. You know, I was just like putting all these pieces together in my head, just going, man, that was really cool. I'm like, wow, it's like John Carpenter's kind of sat around like watching Black Belt Theater for a while, and he was like, yeah, let's go make an action movie. And I'm going to have this element of this and elements from the, you know, it's like, I'll have this truck driver and okay, and yeah, we'll get, you know, Kurt Russell to come in, and he can just be Kurt Russell doing his thing, and, you know, it's like, yeah, I'll have, you know, like the mysticism, and, you know, I'm just going, it's like, man, this was, I enjoyed the hell out of it, but I think part of what the problem, especially trying to get an audience nowadays to relate to it, is they just don't have Black Belt Theater. You know, it's, you get all these, you know, Man with Iron Fists crap coming out that, you know, that doesn't touch on half the shit that they were doing with Big Trouble in Little China. You know, you need to go back to, like, the Shaw Brothers and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got the movie that's got, what, the longest filmed fight scene in cinematic history?
Hell yeah.
And unapologetically so. They Live.
Yep.
John Carpenter's 1988 masterpiece starring Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yep. Man, it was cool because I just was fortunate enough to see this on the big screen within the past week, and it still holds up.
I'll tell you, the message
still
of the
draws
movie,
a crowd. That's the cool thing.
Yeah, the message of the movie has been timeless, and it still is so applicable today. I mean,
oh man, I know. It's at so the great. Time, it was kind of sci-fi, you know, what if kind of a few years from now kind of stuff. But it's
yeah,
like you look at it now, you're just going
consumer and paranoid.
The consumer paranoia, the whole, you know. The economy's in the shitter and everything else is going, damn, this movie could have taken place yesterday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's why it's kind of, out of all of his movies, it's one that's kind of remained timeless, along with Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has a lot of cheesy elements. Mm-hmm. Like, the aliens, they look ridiculously stupid. And I remember seeing it as a youth.
Yeah.
And being kind of turned off by how silly they look. And just being like, man, this has such a great message and such a cool movie. And such a cool concept, you know, uh-huh. to put these sunglasses on and then you can see things that no one else can see and it's all, everyone's being conditioned and
yeah.
lied to and brainwashed and it's so great. But then you see these aliens and they're like these silver, weird, bug-eyed, muscle-looking face things, you know, yeah. and you're just kind of like, what is, who designed these things? But now I see it and I think they're kind of charming. It's a great, great movie.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And then he kind of hit a patch where he was just merely okay.
Yeah, we refer to that as the 90s.
Well, I would say the 90s, really, he was straight up turkey gobble gobble crap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's probably like late 80s, early 90s that he was kind of like, meh. I mean, okay. Yeah, John Carpenter doing a Stephen King book. Who?
Well, that was in the early 80s.
Both of them were like the hottest crap.
Yeah.
But you got Christine.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of that movie?
I appreciated what they were doing with it.
I mean, ultimately, it's a flawed premise from the get-go. I mean, you got a possessed car.
Body by Plymouth, soul by Satan. Yeah.
You know,
okay.
It's just... it's kind of redonk from the get-go.
Yeah. You know, I thought that it was interesting in how they got... The book and the movie out like in the same week because the book I believe dropped on a Tuesday and the movie came out that Friday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they were like, you know, pushing themselves through that. So.
Oh, okay. I did not realize that it was not like just an adaptation of an already established book.
Yeah, and it was like pretty much a day and date kind of thing.
Well, that makes sense. Because, I mean, they're both very similar.
Mm-hmm.
They're both just not very good.
No. Yeah. I mean, the one, like, big iconic image that always sticks out in my head, and it's one of those things where you're just going, man, it's too bad the Carpenters already used this, because anybody else that's going to use this, you're just going to sit there and point at and just go, John Carpenter did that. But the whole thing where after Christine blows up the gas station, and then she's just, like, on fire... chasing that guy down the street and just like his point of view where he looks back and just sees like the car just coming out of the darkness on fire. He's going, dude, that is so freaking cool.
But wasn't that already done before that though in the car that made for TV movie?
Not to that extent. I think the car like may have like that. Well, yeah, you've always had cars that will have like, you know, the fenders caught on fire.
I mean, my young dumb mind is when I saw Christine, number one, I watched it on the DL when I was babysitting and the kids were asleep and they had HBO and I was like, ooh, Christine's on. I guess I must watch it. Mm. Number one, it didn't scare me. I mean, I'm in a stranger's house, all the lights are off, I'm watching this movie. I should at least been creeped out.
Yeah.
I didn't. I watched the entire thing.
Yeah.
Number two, even as a kid, I remember like, this is kind of dumb. I'd much rather watch the car. I mean, because that was one of those movies when I was young. I used to think it was so cool. I thought the car was such an intense.
The car did build a lot of suspense.
So
but yeah, Christine, not as suspenseful. But
no,
just
any '90s ones that you want to throw out? Because
I
think we're moving
to throw
towards
everything
the,
out.
Well, you know what I mean. That's a bad phrase.
I would like to just pretend that the 90s never happened.
All right, well, let's move into the gobble gobbles.
Death has come to your little town, Sheriff. You can either ignore it or you can help me to stop it.
More fancy talk.
All right, so you've got the 90s, or, you know, the downfall.
The ones that, like, you're ashamed that he made.
Like In the Mouth of Madness.
Nah, In the Mouth of Madness was not that bad.
Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Yeah, that was bad.
Escape from L.A.
Yeah.
Oh, good God.
I'd say the first one for me that I walked out of and was just like, oh, wow, that was really bad, was Village of the Damned.
Oh.
His remake.
Oh, oh.
When I walked out of that, I was like in shock
yeah.
that he had made something that incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
Also felt that way with Vampires.
Yeah.
When I walked out of that, and with Vampires, he started this new trend where he did this weird, like, editing trick where he liked to, like, start chopping and, like, fading right in the middle of an action scene. So you'd have, like, these people, like, fighting in parts that are supposed to be cool. And, like, in the 80s, if you would have filmed it, it would have been a really cool yeah. scene that would have worked well with the music. And you would have been like, oh, that was kick-ass.
Uh-huh.
But now it had this weird, like, anticlimactic, strange, dreamlike quality that just did not work at all.
Yeah.
And I noticed it predominantly starting with Vampires, but he carried it on through the rest of his movies, because Ghost of Mars had it a lot, too.
Ghosts of Mars, hell, half of those scenes were filmed in slow motion.
Yeah.
And, and I just kept watching, because I did actually go back and revisit that one for the show, and I was just going, all right, because I hadn't seen it since the theaters.
But you saw it a couple times in the theaters. I remember you recommended it to me, and I was very angry when I went to see it.
Well,
I walked out, and I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe he actually told me to go pay money and see that.
To be fair, okay, Ghost of Mars came out, what was that, like 2001?
Yep.
All right, so considering that, you know, I'll freely admit, it's like Ghost of Mars is not that good of a movie. But if you put it on the Carpenter scale, it's like
still not good.
The best movie the man has done in over 10 years.
No. No. In the Mouth of Madness is way better than that. It has way better, more interesting ideas. He executed the ideas way better. I mean, In the Mouth of Madness at least has scenes that still work. And still were like intense and creative and creepy. I mean,
well,
In the Mouth of Madness kind of falls apart once it's all said and done.
Yeah.
But the whole build-up, I thought he really kind of recaptured some of his magic from his 80s.
Mm.
I mean, the whole concept of the horror author kind of writing his own existence and thinking he was God and then disappearing, and the whole film noir thing of the detective having to hunt him down but him being an insurance adjuster guy
mm-hmm.
for the book company. And I mean, I just thought it was really an interesting concept, but then him, like, entering this Lovecraftian-type village that started having, like, these weird, you know, just these creepy kind of reoccurrence things. And, mm-hmm. and yeah, some of it was cheesy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the white-haired kid on a bike.
Like, I will admit, I revisited In the Mouth of Madness just because of the ones that came out in the 90s. I was like, okay, that one probably sucked the least. And I will give you credit, you know, I will admit there were some interesting concepts running through that film. I'm just going, wow, I really wish that this would have gone someplace. But I know when I walked out of the theater back in 1993 or 4, whenever the hell it was, I saw
94.
That. 4. I was just going, seriously? What the fuck was this movie?
I mean, I just thought it had a lot of really neat, interesting things. And like I said, when it was all said and done, a lot of it wasn't successful.
No.
But I think enough of the introduction worked well enough to where, like with Vampires, within the first 15, 20 minutes, I was like sold on it not being any good at all.
Yeah.
And it never got any better.
Nope. And yeah, I think that's even one that Carpenter admitted that he was like, yeah, that movie's no good.
Yeah, same thing with Escape from L.A., same thing with Village of the Damned. I mean, yeah.
Village of the Damned hurts on so many levels because you're sitting there going, wow, John Carpenter, an icon from my youth. Christopher Reeve, another icon from my youth. Mark Hamill, an icon from my youth, are all in this really shitty film. You're just going, oh, God.
Yeah. Which, it's a remake of what a lot of people still consider. I mean, a lot of people have the original one on their, like, top 10 list of creepiest films.
Yeah. Well, that was pretty much strike three at that point because you had Memoirs of an Invisible Man, In the Mouth of Madness, and then Village of the Damned. You're just going, okay, I've given you three tries at bat, John. You ain't got it. You know, that's why when Escape from L.A. came out, you're going, okay, maybe he's gotten smart. He'll revisit what made him cool. He's got Kurt Russell again by his side.
He didn't realize he was going to literally just remake it.
Yeah, he's got John Carpenter, or he's got Kurt Russell, he's got Deborah Hill with him again. I'm going, okay, this could be really good. It's like, you guys have had, you know, like 15 some odd years to come up with a decent sequel. Let's see what you got. Oh, you just took the script, shuffled it, changed every location from East Coast to West Coast, changed the names, and you're showing me the same
movie.
Made
it much more winky winky.
That I just saw. Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, wink wink. Hey, remember this movie? Ha ha. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. I'm having a really pleasant memory of that film. In fact, I wish I was at home watching it right now because this movie sucks. Let's not talk about it anymore. Done.
All right, well, there you have it. That's our little love fest for the old JC.
Yep.
And we ain't talking about Jesus. So, yeah, to sum it all up, if you are not familiar with his filmography, I would highly recommend The Thing, Halloween, Escape from New York, and Big Trouble in Little China,
yep.
The Fog, Assault from Precinct 13.
Yeah, pretty much just start with the 70s, work your way up to the 80s, and as soon as it hits the 90s, just stop.
Yep.
Because, yeah, you can't go wrong with pretty much any of those films. But
so, yeah. And tune in next time, and we will be having our special Oscar episode.
Woohoo!
All right. Alright, yeah, it's time on Pimp Our Shit.
Alright. Well, of course, there's always the justaphase.com webpage for catching this show and any of the other shows that happen to be on there. You got Mr. Larry Dwayne doing his thing, and Katie's always getting crabby on there, and then, of course, Larry Dwayne and myself will talk pictures.
Just a Phase. With a mother effing F.
Don't we also have a Facebook page somewhere?
Oh yeah, Facebook! Like us! Comment! Have fun! That is all! Bam! Right, anything else?
What about that cool stuff widget that is on the JustaPhase?
Oh yeah, while we're talking about JustaPhase.com. Yeah, on the cool stuff link, there's a widget that basically will have every movie that we have discussed on this podcast. From that widget, if you click on it, it'll take you straight to Amazon. You can buy it from there. You'll be helping out the podcast as well as getting a great deal from Amazon.com. It's so easy.
Yep.
How can you not do it?
Exactly. You need to go. You need to do this.
Wow, chicka bow wow.
This has been a Phase Media Podcast. Find us online at justaphase.com. That's Phase with a mother effin' F.
Phase.